Is really to go over the sort of things that were talked about in a broad overview in lecture. And so some of you are joining us here in the classroom, some of you are joining us from home online. Those of you in the classroom, feel free to stop me anytime and ask me questions. Those of you online, you can send an email to cs75sections@gmail.com, or if you use AOL Instant Messenger, you can instant message cs75sections with questions, and I will read your questions and try and answer them in class. And if we don't have a chance to answer them in class, then somebody will get back to you by email afterwards. So today what we're going to do is we're going to sort of go over getting yourself set up with the course. So there's a lot of things that have to be done when you first start designing a website. And a lot of it is just logistical stuff. Like, you know, how do you manage your web server? How do you manage your domains, the DNS records? How do you use the panel that some of you have already started experimenting with from the Project Zero? And there's all sorts of other things. So we're just going to go through the different pieces of software that you might want to install. How do you get these things set up and working on your computer? And then we'll go into some couple of basic examples of XHTML and CSS and all of these things, and just get you started and on your way. And really, a big part of this course will also be teaching you how to teach yourselves. The internet changes very quickly. There are new technologies that come out all of the time, literally month after month, new technologies come out. And so when you take this course a year from now, if you want to make your own website, there are going to be a lot of things that have changed. And so a lot of this is going to be sort of pointing you in directions where you can find your own resources and learn yourself. Because just for an example, with CSS, there are so many different CSS attributes and CSS classes that nobody remembers them all. So sort of when you want to make a website, you have an idea for a vision in your mind, and coming up with a vision is really a big part of making a website. Then you start going and looking for the CSS, you know, styles and the CSS font attributes and whatnot that you will want to use. And so a lot of this is, you know, going onto the internet yourself, and we're going to show you how to do that so that after this course you will also be able to continue to get going. So hopefully all of you have bought your domains by now, and so you bought through GoDaddy, or maybe you picked another registrar that you'd like, and hopefully you've also pointed the name servers to ns1.cs75.net and ns2.cs75.net. And so now you have the domain panel. And so you go to panel.cs75.net, and you should have a login name, which I'm going to have here, and I'm going to log in. And you get here. And the domain that I picked is skis.com. So let's see if we are logging in. Okay. I changed my password. There we go. Okay. So normally when you log in, you get right to here. Your account. And if we go to domain setup, you'll see that I have my domain, skis.com, set up right here. And so if we go to email accounts, you see there's one email created, and many of you have already sent emails to help@cs75.net as per Project One survey. And so there's a lot of other things you can do from this panel. You can manage your email accounts. One of the things that you may be interested in is DNS management. And this is all set up for you, so you don't have to play with it, but you can see right now that we have here skis.com is registered with the name servers on cs75.net. We have a DNS record for www, and it's an A record. So if we deleted this www record here, if somebody tried to go to www.skis.com, this would no longer, there would no longer be a www DNS record. They would not be able to get to our website. And you can add other subdomains. So let's say I wanted to create a hello subdomain. So I wanted hello.skis.com. I could add another A record. I could point it here to the panel, and then we've got that. And then you can see down here there's add domain records, and then you can add them like this. And then there's a lot of other advanced features which we're not going to go over today. So a lot of you have been asking questions about XAMPP. XAMPP, it stands for XHTML, Apache, MySQL, PHP, and Perl. And basically what it is it's all of the various components of like web servers that are out there today packaged into one thing. In the past, you had to all of these five things that are in XAMPP, plus a bunch of other things that XAMPP comes with, you'd have to download them, you'd have to install them yourself, you'd have to configure them, which sometimes could take hours. XAMPP all comes together in one package. It should usually just be a one or two or three click install. So I installed XAMPP beforehand on this computer. You can get it from, I have too many links on this right now. If you just Google XAMPP, you'll see here, apachefriends.org. And so you can download it here. They have it for Linux, Windows, or Mac, whichever you use. And then when you install it, what it does is it installs a local web server to your computer. So what this does is it makes testing the websites that you make much easier. Instead of having to, every time you update a file or something on your website, then re-upload it to our CS75.net servers and then go and make a connection through the web, you can make a connection through your computer. And so basically, it's just nobody else is able to access this website except for you who are on your computer. And so I've installed XAMPP here. Once you install it, it's going to create, if you follow all the standard install options, it's going to create a directory called C:\XAMPP on Windows and different on Mac. And so in this, there's a folder called htdocs. And htdocs is where all of your web stuff goes. And so if we go to my browser here, I'm using Firefox, but we can go to any browser, and I just type in localhost. Localhost is keyword for the what's known as the loopback address, which is 127.0.0.1. And basically all it means is your own computer has that IP address. Everybody's own computer has that IP address. It's sort of a hard-coded IP address. And so basically I am calling up the web server on my computer. And this is the welcome screen that you get for XAMPP. If it's installed correctly, this is what you'll get. And usually they do a very good job of making the installs run smoothly. And so now when you're developing a website, you can just put your website files in here. And then you can access them like that instead of SFTPing things to CS75.net. So I've created a folder in here called test. And in test, I've created just a very, very simple. Actually, I think I just copied another HTML file. But so if I go to localhost/test, it's going to bring up index.html, which right now has not much in it except for hello world. And so you can put, you know, whatever HTML you want in here. Right now this is not even valid HTML because it doesn't have a doc type. But this is just to show you how XAMPP works. The install process is relatively easy, relatively pain-free. So that's one way to go through testing out your websites. And when you're happy with what you have, then you can upload it to the CS75 server where it will live on the internet for everybody else to see. So another option is to use SSH and SFTP and to develop everything directly on the web. And so SSH is basically a way to make a secure connection with another server. So in this case, you'll be SSHing to CS75.net. And a free SSH program that is very common, works very well, is PuTTY. You can download it just by Googling PuTTY SSH. This link is a little bit long. I'll also post all of these links on the website afterwards. Some of them may already be there. And so the way PuTTY works is I'm going to bring up PuTTY right here. And in hostname right here, you're going to basically write your my username for CS75.net is Jay Cohen. So I'm Jay Cohen at CS75.net. And the port is always 22. And then when I open over here, it's going to ask me for my password, which I'll put in. And then I'm logged in. And so now you're at a command line. And command line is scary for many people. How many people have used the command line before for various things? Okay, how many people have used the Unix command line? Okay, cool. So people are pretty familiar with it. If we do ls here, that allows me to see my directory structure. And so if you go to public HTML is your folder. It's in Unix, you have folders just like in Windows, which is viewable to the world. So this is where your website goes. So anything in the public HTML folder is going to be what other people see. So when they go to my domain, which is skis.com, what it does is it looks in the public HTML folder and it pulls up the index.html file. And so if we go into public.html using cd, which is just the standard Unix change directory command. Yes. Yeah, let me see if I can. Okay. There is a way to do that.
If you right click on the window, does that give you the...
I think right.
Does it?
Oh, maybe not.
No, that'll just paste.
Make the resolution.
I think you.
If you go to that left top corner, and then do
a
right click.
I think if
click,
I go to appearance here, and then okay. So let's make it a little bit bigger, and then let's start a new session here. Sorry, let me just get in there. No, okay. No, that's not going to work for me. We have appearance here. Sorry, 20. Okay, and then session. So I'm going to Jay Cohen at cs75.net. Okay. Here we go. Okay. So can everybody see better now? So ls, I've listed my directories in my home folder here. Public HTML is the one that we're going to be concerned with. Maildir is where the inbox files for all of your email accounts go, which one should be created by default, and you can create more. IMAP also has to deal with that. And domains is if there are multiple domains if you have multiple domains registered all on the same server, then things will get more complicated, but right now I only have one. If we go into public HTML, you'll see what I've got here. I've got index.html, and I've got logo.jpg. This is just a backup of my index.html file. It's not going to be there in your case. And so if I go to skis.com here, it's just going to bring up my index.html file, which is the default one. Except that I've modified it a little bit. I've put a hello in the top right corner. And so if we wanted to, for example, just edit this a little bit, you can pull up your favorite text editor. And so where do I have hello? So maybe I wanted hello, my name is Jesse. And I'm going to save that, and you should see that this is going to be instantly available if I refresh my web page. Now, hello, my name is Jesse, for everybody to see on the web. And so, sorry, was it?
Can you use Emacs as your text editor? Is that just one that
actually has,
or you can use anyone?
Well, you can use any text editor you want. If you want to work through SSH, which I probably wouldn't recommend. If your websites get larger and have more files, it's much more convenient. This is why XAMPP is so convenient, because you can work on your own computer with your own text editor, with whatever text editor you're comfortable with. You can get everything working properly. And then once it is, you just FTP it to here, and then it's all good. Yes?
So on the case of XAMPP, you still have to have the same directory structure under htdocs, right, or wwwroot or whatever. The document structure, you still have to be the same. That way you can map it to your public HTML folder.
So if your directory structure is different in XAMPP than it is when you FTP it on, then some of your links are going to break, right? And so sometimes actually that happens inadvertently, and so you've got to test your web page and maybe make a couple of small changes. But if you use XAMPP properly and you keep your directory structure organized, then you should be able to upload it all as one, as a zip file or something, just unzip it there, and then everything should work properly. Yes?
What happens when there's a difference between what you do with XAMPP and what's going on CS75 servers?
What kind of difference?
A GIF file that doesn't show up.
Okay, so
even though it's physically there.
Okay, so there's a couple of reasons why that may be happening. One is perhaps you forgot to upload the file. Another is when you work with HTML, let's just pull up a little example here. I'll use the source for cs75.net. And let's look for a link here. So when you have links, you can have what are called relative links, or you can have hard-coded links. And so hard-coded links are things like this, http://www.summer.harvard.edu. This is a hard-coded link. Doesn't matter where you click this link on from, it's always going to go to this website, because it's a full website address. Here's another link. This is, let's find a good one, a good example here. Okay, so here, all of these. This is the menu bar, which you may recognize from the CS75 website. You have your bulletin board, grades, lectures. These are relative links. What it's basically saying is take the current web address where we're at, cs75.net, and add this onto the end. And so if you're using relative links, and then when you change from XAMPP to CS75 server, you change your directory structure somehow, these relative links may break. If you're using hard-coded links, and you've got your hard-coded links maybe coded to your local host for some reason or something, when you go to cs75.net, localhost is no longer going to work. Things are going to be different. So you should pay attention to your links. And when you have an image tag, you have, you know, image ref. And so ref is the link for the image. And so that may be a reason why that's happening. That's a pretty common problem, actually. And so SSH is a good way to just get around. Let's get to the bigger SSH. Get around in general. Maybe you want to make small changes. You know, also good way to familiarize yourself with a Unix command line. And you can find lists of all of these commands on Google. If you're not familiar, most of you here have already used that, so I'm not going to go over that. When you want to make big changes to your website or develop from scratch, you know, it's a good idea to work on your own machine. And when you're done with all these files, you want to SFTP them to the server. And so there's a couple of ways you can do it. One way is there's an interface through the direct panel. And so you have FTP. You go to files here. I can actually see the same directory structure that we saw through the terminal. So remember, we had maildir, we had domains, IMAP, public HTML. Everything with a dot in front of it is hidden in our terminal, so we don't see that there. And so public HTML is my folder. And so then what we can do is we can go into it, and we can see what's in there. And I can create new folders. I can create new files through this interface. I can also upload files through... create new files. Upload files to current directory. I can hit this, and then I can use this and upload files manually. But if you've got, like, a very complex website, you're not going to want to put all these files in manually like this. It is an easy interface, which is a plus going for it. So if you don't want to install all this other software. Good piece of software for Windows that I like to use, it's free, is WinSCP, which is an SFTP client. And basically all this is something that allows you to transfer large files, many files, to a server very easily. And it's literally just drag and drop. You'll see a window, and it'll look like your directory structure on the server. You'll be able to double-click on folders to go into them. You'll be able to make new folders. You'll be able to take the folders on your machine. If you were developing using XAMPP, you can just take your entire, you know, subdirectory in htdocs, drag it into your public HTML folder, and then your website should be working if everything is correct. And so WinSCP can also be installed with a Google search. FileZilla is another SFTP client. If you want a demo of WinSCP, we can bring that up here. And so I'm going to hit new for a new session, and it's the same thing. Literally, cs75.net is where I'm connecting to. My username, my password, and I log in. And the first time you log in, it's going to ask you if you want to accept the key. That's just a security thing. You'll say yes. And so now, literally, I see on the left side what I have in my computer, and on the right side, I see my directory structure there. And if I want to upload files back and forth, I can literally just click files here. So let's, here, for example, is some homework I'm working on. I just click and drag. I move it there. This file is now on the CS75 server. If we go back to PuTTY, we can see that it's there. If I do an ls here, where was it? Okay, maybe not. No, I want to be in my home folder. If I do an ls, there it is, psetdraft.docx. So SFTP is a very easy way to transfer files. That's probably going to be what you want to do once you're done developing on your local host, if you do choose to go that way. So if you're developing on your local host, text editors. Notepad++ is a free text editor. What's nice about it is that if you're writing HTML, it does syntax highlighting for you, and it does indentation and these sort of things for you. And so if we have here, let's just, for example, view the source for this page. If I use Notepad++, I can create a new file. Let's just paste this in. If I save it as an HTML file, you see, all of a sudden, everything on this page is highlighted very nicely for me. And so I can sort of see like where my indentation is. I can see where my tags are. So let's say, you know, there's one part of the page, for example, the head section. I've finished my head section. I'm done working with it. I don't want to see it anymore because it's cluttering up my screen. I can just minimize it right there like that. And so this is just a helpful way to keep you guys organized with everything. And Notepad++, all of the software that we're showing you here is free. There are, of course, options that you can pay for, but quite frankly, I use the free software. Many professionals use the free software. It works very, very well. Okay, so that was all of the software that we have to go through, actually. So have people installed some of this software already on their machines? Have people had any problems getting anything working?
Xamp, I think there is a question on what PHP runs, 5 or...
So the newer versions of Xamp no longer have PHP 4.
Okay, so the default switch.
Yes. Okay. If you have an older version of Xamp, then you'll have to consult that version's documentation. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry,
yeah, no problem.
If you're on an older version of Xamp, should you delete that one before you install the new one?
So probably the extent of the stuff you're going to be doing in this class is not going to necessitate that you need the newer version. And so if you're happy using the older version, then I would say stick with it rather than bothering with the trouble of uninstalling that, installing the new one, and then maybe running into some problems. And if you find later on that you do need the new one, then you know you can always install it then. All right, any other questions? And just as a reminder, if people are watching along at home, you can send emails to cs75section@gmail.com, and we are waiting to answer your questions live here. Okay, so what are we going to do next? We've gone through all of the software. We've gone through the panels. So let's talk a little bit about XHTML. So XHTML is not a programming language. It's what's known as a markup language. And so many of you have heard of HTML. XHTML is basically a stricter version of HTML. It's an effort to put very, very rigorous standards on HTML so that it's basically an effort to standardize the web so that every website, you know, conforms to certain standards. Every browser, some people use Firefox. If you're on a Mac, maybe you use Safari. If you use Windows, maybe you use Internet Explorer. Every browser implements the same way of displaying XHTML. Because if you go to a website, if you go to google.com, what happens when you pull up google.com, it looks like this to you. It has pictures. It has this nice little display box. What your computer is actually getting is this, which is XHTML with some JavaScript in there and some other things. And so your browser sees this file, which is just a text file, essentially. Your browser looks at the file, and the XHTML gives your browser directions on how to display. And so it's basically saying, you know, put the search box in the middle of the page, put the buttons below it centered, all of these sort of things. And so the concept of XHTML is tags. Those things in the brackets are tags. And they go around text or around whatever you want to put them around. They're basically directions to your browser. They are instructions. So, for example, the B tag, which is just bold. If I were to put, let's open up Notepad here. And let's actually open up my test file that I created in my XAMPP. We can do that more easily like this. Okay. So here's what I very quickly whipped up earlier today. Okay. HTML, head, body, hello world. Okay. So the first tags are the outside tags, HTML. Every time you have a tag, you have to close it. You close a tag by having the forward slash at the end. So if I move on to this tag here, you'll see the top tag is highlighted and the bottom tag is highlighted. And HTML tells the browser we're using HTML here. And what I should have is a doc type. So I'm going to put a doc type in right now. A doc type is basically just a standard. It's basically telling our browser that we're using this version of HTML because there are different versions, and different versions have different standards, different behavior. So your website should begin with a doc type. This is what's known now as valid HTML. And so every website has two sections, a head section and a body section. The body section is where everything that displays on your page goes. The head section is sort of like internal directions to your browser. There is where you put your CSS sheets, which we'll talk about in a little while. Your head section is also where, in a couple of weeks, we're going to get into JavaScript. You'll embed your JavaScript in your head section by, you know, just having a link ref to another JavaScript page, or you can inline it too if you wanted. And so right now we've got nothing in our head section. It's not that important for us. In our body, we just have hello world. And so basically all we're saying is display hello world on the page. So really simple example is, let's say I wanted to make hello world bold. So I put this text in these B tags here. And if I save this, and I go back to my local host here, now hello world is bold. And so these tags just told the browser, display hello world in bold. And there are many, many different kinds of HTML tags. You have B for bold. You have I for italics. You have various, you know, alignment tags to align text. There are also tables. HTML tables are a great way of laying out your page very easily. So, for example, CS75.net uses tables. If we see right here, where is the opening table tag? Here, we've got table width equals 100%, and then we have another table within the table, and you can nest your tables. It gets rather confusing, actually, especially when you're trying to read big websites like this. And so we don't have time to go over many, many different tags. You have H1, H2, H3. These are what are called header tags, and they basically specify different ways you can have different headers associated with different font sizes that you can control through CSS. You have your link tags, which are A. A is for a link, and then href is the address of the link. There are many different tags. The best way to learn your HTML tags is to look at websites like this and then try them out on your own thing. Let us, what did I want to do? Okay, so basically the concept is whenever you have a tag that's open, you have to close it. You can nest tags within each other. Like we saw, for example, with our very, very, very simple example, you've got head nested within HTML, you have body nested within HTML also, and then within body you have, you know, these bold tags. And so tags can be nested. So you can do pretty much everything you want with tags. And you can specify everything. You can specify the alignment of text, all with tags. But it can get incredibly tedious, especially the longer your websites get. So CSS, cascading style sheets, are a way to specify a global preference, a global set of directions for your web page. So it's basically like saying, if I'm not specifying specific directions in HTML, this is the way I want my web page to look. So maybe I'll set like a global option saying, I want all of my text to be red in color, and I want my background to be black. And we can do all of that in CSS, and then by default, my browser will read the CSS style sheet, and it will do what I told it to do in the CSS style sheet. And then within the HTML, we can give specific directions. But CSS is even more powerful than that, because we can specify different sections of our web page. So we can have what are called classes. We can have classes, and we can have IDs. And so, for example, H1, what you saw before, that's a CSS class. And so you can specify that everything that's in the tags H1 should have certain attributes. And so now you can have sort of attributes that inherit from each other in a way. So let's pull up a web page here. So this is a rather simple web page that a friend of mine made for another computer science course. And CS51 follows CS50. If we look at the HTML for this website, you'll see that in the head, we have link rel equals style sheet. That's just telling the browser that we're putting a style sheet here, and the address is style.css. Okay, and so the browser is going to look in the head, it's going to see that, and it's going to know we should display the web page according to the directions in this style sheet, style.css. And so if we look at style.css, let's just close out some of these windows here since we're getting rather cluttered. We see the style sheet. And so basically what this is saying is we have body up here. And body is the body HTML tag. And so it's basically saying everything in body should obey the following directions. And so font family is what it sounds like. It's just the type of font that we want our text to be displayed in. And font size is just the size of the font that we want our text to be displayed in. So we have this style sheet here. And it's telling our browser to display everything in the body like that. And then you have A. If you remember, A tags are your link tags. So you usually have A, and then you have href, because you're going to want to be linking to somewhere. This is saying that every single A tag in this document should obey the following rules. So color, 6-6, that's some number for color. I think it's like gray or something like that. We can look here. It's like black or something like that. It's gray, actually. Sorry. So if you see, this is an A tag over here. These are links over here, but they actually inherit from different classes. And we'll go over how inheritance works and when does CSS take priority. Because, for example, we have like that body direction, and it tells us everything in body should have... Okay, this is getting confusing now that I have so many windows open. Everything in body should have font size of 7 points, right? But obviously, if you look at this web page, there's stuff here that's larger than 7 points. So that was, you know, using something that a CSS that overrides the body CSS. And so this is called inheritance, I believe, although I'm not sure on that one. So we have here our general directions for body. We have A. And this is pretty cool because A has 4 different states, and these are called pseudo classes in CSS. You have link, visited, hover, and then there's a 4th one called active, which we'll talk about in a second. And so link is the default state. It's basically saying all of my A tags that are links, I want them to be that color, and I want them to be underlined. Usually links are underlined. And then visited is, if you've already gone to this link, you know how some browsers display like links that you've already visited in purple and ones that you haven't visited yet in blue? Well, it turns out you can adjust this to whatever you want. In this case, she chose to keep the visited links exactly the same as the regular links. So even if we go here and we, you know, go to a link, if we go back to the web page, it's still exactly the same color. That's because the CSS is telling it to be the same color, even if a link has already been visited. Hover. Hover is cool. Hover is when you move your mouse over a link, what happens to the link? And so you can actually get the link to change color, or you can get it to underline, or do things like this, like that. And in the past, actually, before CSS was popular, people had to do this with JavaScript, which we're going to go into in a couple of weeks. CSS makes it a lot less complicated. And so if you go to some examples, you'll see when I hover over this link, it underlines. When I hover over all of these links, they underline. When I move my mouse off, they don't underline. And that's because when I hover over this link, its state changes. It's no longer in the link pseudo class. It's now in the hover pseudo class, and it's obeying the rules specified in that class on the style sheet. And so you can specify rules for any HTML tag in your document using CSS like this. And there are many, many other things. We'll go into some websites that have very, very good CSS resources. So the other thing you can do is you can create your own classes. So span is an HTML tag that basically just denotes an area of the document. And so here we have span menu item 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. And basically this is all positioning. So this is using something called a tableless layout, which has become very popular recently for a number of reasons. You've seen like table tags and, you know, TD and TR and these sort of things. Well, now there's sort of a shift towards using CSS to lay things out. And so you can use the position attributes. And so you have here position absolute, which basically means anything, any HTML element, we'll look at menu item 2, for example. Any HTML element that has the tags span and then class equals menu item 2 around it is going to obey these rules. And position absolute basically means where is it located from the top left corner of the screen? How many pixels? And so this is basically an aesthetic thing. It's just you can specify exactly to the pixel, which is the smallest unit of resolution on a screen, where you want things on your website positioned. And so it gives you very, very powerful control over your web page. And so the syntax for CSS itself is relatively simple. The hard part is, you know, coming up with a great design for your website that's aesthetically pleasing and then getting the CSS to do it. But basically here what we're saying is we want it positioned absolutely from the top of the screen. We want the text aligned on the right side. You can have, you know, center, left, the same thing like all of this. And then left 50 pixels, which means we want it 50 pixels spacing from the left of the screen, and we want 20 pixels width, which means this element should be 20 pixels wide. And so if we look at this website here, if we look at the source, which is here, we'll see. Okay, so you have span, class, and then you have menu item 0, menu item 1. And so basically all this is doing is you've got these two span tags here, and they are specifying how this link should be laid out. And so the browser sees these span tags. It sees that there's a class here, menu item 1. It goes, it looks in the CSS style sheet and sees that that should be positioned, you know, 50 pixels from the left edge of the screen, and the link should have a width of 20 pixels. And then it does that to this link, O1, here. And so this is how you specify, and you can reuse this too. So if you look down here, menu item 1 is reused later on down here on the screen too. So you can use classes multiple times. So if you have a bunch of elements on your web page, you all want them to have the same layout, you put them in the same span tags, and they all have the same layout. This is also useful because let's say, you know, you want to make a big change to your website. You want to change the font color of the entire page. Well, now you can just edit one place in your CSS style sheet, and the font color of your entire page is changed, whereas in the past, maybe you would have had these font color attributes in your HTML tags. You can also embed CSS directly into HTML, which is called inlining. And that's useful sometimes. Basically, you would add a tag attribute. We can look at that if people want to see. So let's look a little bit more at this style sheet. There are a couple of other things. So these are all called classes, these span classes. You can also have classes that aren't part of span. You can just have classes that are on their own. For example, this is underline. And you can make any HTML element a member of this class by simply in the HTML tag, class equals, and then in quotes, underline. So there are a couple of other things, these pound signs. The pound signs are known as IDs. And IDs are different from classes because IDs are only used once on the page. So if we're just saying menu, this is basically the ID that controls the entire left bar of this page. And so it's saying, we've got this menu here. And then it's specifying directions on how that's displayed. And then content is the right bar of this page. And so you can actually get column layouts with IDs. Yes?
She chose span as opposed to class. And why is that, like, a, I mean, for example, underline. So when you were doing, when you were in the HTML, it would say class equals underline.
Yes.
But in the other one, it's span equals lecture one or something.
Right. No, it's not exactly. So if you look at the HTML here, so inside HTML tags, you can have what are called attributes. And so
right, okay,
span is the tag, and then class is an attribute. And you can actually put a class attribute in any tag. So if we wanted the P tag is paragraph. Okay, if we wanted to, let's say I have here my CSS style sheet. If I wanted to override how paragraphs are done, I can just do P, and then, you know, I can do whatever, a position absolute. And then I can do, you know, left, you know, 50 pixels. And then I can do that. And then that overrides P. And now let's say, though, I want to have subclasses of P. So every single element in our page that's in P tags is going to be, you know, positioned absolute 50 pixels from the left on our web page, whatever web page it is. Now if I want to have, you know, P.subparagraph. So let's say I'm going to create a new class that inherits from P is called sub. And so now I can say, you know, I don't need to put position.absolute because actually this is just a subclass of P. So it's going to have all of the attributes of P. That's called inheritance, actually. Sorry. So I don't need to put position equals absolute. But let's say I want this one 100 pixels from the left. So then I can write left 100 pixels. And so now anything that I put in P tags, if I'm on my web page and I'm just going to put this here, I can put P and then I can write class. I put the class attribute equals sub. Okay? And then I'm going to, this paragraph is indented 100 pixels.
And if it was just the regular P class, then it would just be P class equals.
Right. So if I just, no, if I just do P like this, then this paragraph is indented 50 pixels.
Okay.
And so you can override CSS settings by sort of specifying them over. So it's a sort of like from least to greatest thing. So, you know, body is like your most general CSS settings. And then anything inside body, if you if there's an HTML tag inside that has a class that has some, yes? If there's an HTML tag inside body that is a member of a class that has some CSS like style specification that is specified in body, but it's specified differently, that will display with that class's own. That was garbled. Sorry. But that will display with the class's own thing. Like the same way we showed here, you know, you have these subclasses of P. Yes?
So the advantage of using CSS to do layout over tables is mm-hmm. that it's easier to make the entire website that you're doing consistent since you just keep calling the same CSS classes rather than having to redraw the same table over and over again in each individual file.
So there's a couple of advantages. One advantage is consistency, yes. Because you can write one style sheet and then you can have that style sheet referenced on every subpage of your website. Okay, so all of the pages of your website will display very uniformly and very nicely. It's also easier. You don't have to write as much HTML. You can still make every web page display, every subpage of your website display the same. It's going to take a lot more HTML if you want to like make, you know, all of the fonts a certain color or this sort of thing. So that's one advantage. Another advantage is that it's easy to change your entire website. Suppose you have your website with 100 subpages, and the background is black. And then you decide one day, I don't like the black background, I want a blue background. If you've been inlining your CSS, you know, just like having an HTML tag with an attribute that says background equals black, now you've got to go to every single one of your 100 subpages and change black to blue. If you have a CSS sheet, you just change black to blue in one place on your sheet, and then the display for your entire website is now changed. And you can achieve like granularity as fine as you want, because you can override CSS settings as much as you want. Let's say there's like one special place in your web page where you want something completely different. Well, then you can just inline CSS there, and that element will display differently. And you can inline CSS by, let's say now we have another P. I can inline CSS by doing style equals, and then I can do position, you know, or let's just say left, you know, 600 pixels. So now what's going to happen here actually is this paragraph is completely different. And yeah, if we had more time, we would do our examples. And so this actually, even though it has the P tags, because it has its own style inlined in here, the browser is going to use this, which is going to override the setting up here.
Does that override all the settings? Do we lose all of that? Or like, if there was a right, would it still keep the right?
You don't lose all of that. You lose only what you manually override. So everything else inherits from what it's a member of. That's why it's sort of called inheritance, right? Because if you imagine, like, the P is the parent, right? And so the parent's going to pass some of the parent's attributes down to the kids. You know, maybe the kids will have the same hair color as the parent, but the kids are going to have some of their own unique features too. And so the unique features are what override, and then the rest are inherited directly from the parent. And so that's actually why we have inheritance here. Okay, so this is some of the power of CSS. In the last couple of minutes, I'm going to point you in the direction of some resources that you can use to learn more about it yourself. So we've gone through all of the software, Notepad++. One very, very good site is w3schools.com. This is one of the ways in which I learned HTML. This is run by the same organization that establishes all of the standards for XHTML, so their tutorials are going to be very correct. They have tons of tutorials. They have tutorials on XHTML. They have tutorials on styling. Later on in the semester when we do SQL, they have SQL tutorials. They have tutorials on JavaScript, everything. And this is a really great website. Another website that I found very useful for CSS is tizag.com. And this has a very, very good reference list of all of the different CSS attributes that you can specify. There are so many of them. Just to give you an idea here. So, you know, you have color, you have background color, you have... Sorry, did I hit the wrong... No, I think I'm okay here. There are many, many, many things. This is a very, very good tutorial and reference list. You can also use Google. You know, quite frankly, when you're developing a website, like one of the best things to do is sit down with a piece of paper and kind of draw what you want. And then once you figure out what you want, then you start looking for the right CSS attributes that you'll need. Because there are so many of them that it's not really used to like memorize them. It's, you find them when you want them, essentially. And so this is another great website. So w3schools.com and tizag.com are two very good websites that I found were nice. CSSplay.co.uk. If you want to see some of the really cool things that you can do with CSS, this is a very nice website. This features websites that use only CSS to do layout. No tables. So you can see how powerful CSS is. Just, you know, they have all kinds of cool stuff. If you click layouts here, you know, three column layouts, several, seven variations, and then it has all of this. It has the CSS for all of this, too. And so you can pull examples from here, adapt these to meet your own website needs. Minimalsites.com is another one that I found very nice, too. So that is it. That is all I have here. We've done XAMPP. So any questions before we wrap up? Yeah.
I'm not sure if you said this, I just missed it. What's the big difference between tag IDs and classes?
Okay, so IDs are used only once, and classes can be used multiple times anywhere. So IDs are used only once per page. So if you wanted to keep things simpler, you can make every single thing a class. That'll be fine. You don't even have to worry about IDs. The reason IDs are, there's really no difference other than a stylistic thing. So here we have like the page is composed of two main elements. You've got like this left column here with, you know, all of your links, and then you've got your right column here with all of the text on the page, right? And so if you look at the page source, you'll see that, let me find it here. So div. Div is a tag to like specify a section. ID equals menu. And so instead of having class, you have ID equals menu. And the reason we use ID is because there's only one menu per page. And so it's really a stylistic thing. And so when we have all of our stuff for menu here, and then if we go here, the next one, div ID equals content. And that's here. Whereas for the classes, we have, you know, menu item 4 here, up there. But it's a class because we're also using the same class down here. So the class, you have multiple elements on the page, are members of the same class or inherit style from the same class.
So it's more for just the programmer or the coder to...
Essentially, it's a way to stay organized. But if you wanted, you could make everything a class.
It wouldn't really change.
And nothing would change, yes. So we've got all of that. So validation. So there is a strict standard for XHTML. And the reason that is because of one of the main reasons is accessibility. Now that computers have become completely ubiquitous and everything like that, you have, you know, people with various disabilities using computers, and people have screen readers. People have, you know, these sort of enlarged screens. And the nice thing about XHTML is that it has standards to make websites usable with screen readers and usable with these sort of things. And so validating your XHTML, basically it's a way of checking it. So browsers are very robust. Even if you put an incorrect XHTML in a browser, the browser is going to do the best job it can. It's going to display your website. Most likely to you and everybody else who sees it, your website will look very nice and will work properly. But if somebody has a, you know, a screen reader and the screen reader is trying to interpret the website to read it out loud, not having properly formed XHTML may cause problems there, just in terms of like confusing the software or if there's automated software. And so validating your XHTML is important. And we're going to ask that your XHTML is valid. And so the way you do is you just put an address of a website in here, and it will tell you whether or not it's validated. And so actually, if we do this, I don't think mine is valid. HTTP, okay. Sorry. But if you put your website in here, okay. So actually, this is valid HTML. Let's say this document was tentatively checked as XHTML 1.0 transitional. There's one warning. And then if you go down here, you can see what the warning is. No character encoding found. So this is just because we didn't specify something in the doc type up top on the page. But that's also one of the reasons why you should have a doc type in XHTML. It's basically telling you know, what standard for XHTML you're using. In this case, 4.01 transitional, which I don't know what that means. There are many different standards.
Where do we find the... the doc type tag that we're supposed to use.
What I would do, when I went and made my site, I just went on cs75.net. I just pulled up the source, and then I took doc type right here. You can just copy and paste that directly into your page. You might also want to, this is also an important tag here. It has to do with the doc type too. You might just want to copy and paste these two tags and then start making your page. And
what's
then,
the XML?
I don't know.
Oh. It's just important.
That would be the XML namespace. You could also try strict, but strict is pretty nasty when it comes to some. You know, it's nightmare to do strict. Mm-hmm. So transition is preferred for, you know. I think this is something they David Hyde Meyer talks about it. He took his class a long time back.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Actually, that was good. So yeah, different standards have different tags that are permitted and not permitted. Probably for the scope of this class, you won't run into these issues. But keeping in mind that you should be generating valid XHTML is an important thing. And so you validate by doing this. And if there's errors, it will tell you, you know, there'll be a red bar here saying this document contains errors. And then you can go down and you can see what the errors are. So, like, for example, maybe you forgot to close a tag somewhere. It'll say, you know, this tag was not closed, and then that will generate an error. And so you can see what's wrong like that. All right, so that is it for this week. Next week, we'll be talking about dynamic websites. And so we'll be starting with PHP, which is a programming language that runs on the server side, which allows you to generate dynamic web pages. So for example, how do you, let's say I have a web page and people log into my web page. And when they log in, I want to, you know, say, you know, if I log in, I want to say, hello, Jesse. So, you know, we send the login to a PHP script. Our PHP script would figure out that it's me logging in, and it would send back a web page that has, you know, my name on it. And so this is how you generate dynamic content, which is really all about, this is like all of the internet now. This is what the internet is about. You can't do much if everybody who comes to your website sees exactly the same page. And so that's what we'll be going through next week. Okay, any other questions? All right, so for those of you watching at home, you can email help@cs75.net anytime, and we will get back to you when we get the email as soon as possible. Thanks very much.
Thank you.